Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. I'm Todd Stauber. I'm here with Sam Lady. We've had a break for 1 week, but we are back, and we are back with a vengeance. Sam, we've got a great show today as we look at Premier League action, wins from United and Manchester City, a little bit of holiday cheer from Sir Alex Ferguson. We got special guest Aaron Hyde, goalkeeper coach of the Chicago Fire, and, of course, the game predictor. Sam, we start in the beautiful country of your birth today with the Premier League fixtures. At the moment, we've got an absolute cracker going on between Arsenal and Newcastle, where we've seen three goals scored in the span of 5 minutes. Currently, Arsenal 4-3. We're in the 73rd minute there. Listeners, we'll keep you up to date on that as that transpires here. But we're going to go to Old Trafford, where this morning Man United was able to get a 2-0 win over West Bromwich Albion. Solid win for United. Shinji Kagawa played his first game since October, and Nemanja Vidic started in central defense for the first time this season. Robin Van Persie was absent from the starting 11, but on the substitutes bench as Alex Ferguson deployed Danny Welbeck up front with Kagawa underneath him. United would open the scoring in the 9th minute on an own goal from West Brom's Gareth McCauley after a great little touch from Kagawa put Ashley Young in a dangerous spot in the box. Young fired a left-footed ball across the face of the goal, which came off the right leg of McCauley and into the baggies net. Not really the position you'd want to be in, down 1-0 to United at Old Trafford inside 10 minutes, Sam. But West Brom did well to keep United at bay through the rest of the first half. Ben Foster, West Brom's goalkeeper, former United goalkeeper, he pushed United's best effort of the half, which was a half volley off of Young. He pushed it off the bar and over for a corner. And then he almost had a disaster right at the stroke of halftime when he failed to deal with the back pass and Welbeck closed him down. And Welbeck almost blocked his clearance into the back of the net, Sam. What did you think about that first half between United and West Brom? And what do you think how they looked there in the first half?
Well, just leading up to it, Todd, I did feel this would have been a game that maybe Man United might have dropped points. You know, they've been on a decent run. Great win against Newcastle in midweek, and I just felt that this was the game, home against West Brom, and as you know, West Brom are a very, very difficult unit to play against, very well organised, but, you know, I've got goals in them. And I did fancy this might be a game where United slipped up, and obviously they, you know, you've got a player like Van Persie that comes off the bench and scored a fantastic goal. Again, you know, we talk time and time again this season, you know, United haven't had to play well in a lot of games, but they've still won games because of the type of personnel they've got on the field.
Well, they certainly, you know, I thought that it was going to be a very tough game with West Brom. And to be fair to West Brom, I mean, when they came back out in the second half, you know, they came out with a resolve that is the reason why they're sitting in sixth place right now. You know, United did introduce Van Persie in the 67th, and West Brom followed that by bringing on Romelu Lukaku right away. And immediately, the Baggies hit the bar in the 70th minute on a header off the corner. United looked well out of sync and couldn't get into a rhythm. Well, West Brom put them under pressure constantly and really held the better of the possession in the second half. Van Persie did have a good chance in the 82nd, but Foster was up to the challenge again. And then I thought really kind of what settled the game down and really, you know, once again a turning point, even though it came late, 83rd minute, but they brought on Paul Scholes for Tom Cleverley, you know, just to play the final, you know, 10 to 13 minutes, depending on what the injury time is going to be. And really, they needed that influence in the midfield at that point. They couldn't get the ball down. They couldn't get a rhythm. And, you know, here comes on Scholes again, and he just provided that for him. In the end, it was his play at the top of the box at the West Brom penalty area in injury time that created Van Persie's, you know, goal, putting Van Persie in the lead of the Premier League and really putting the game out of reach for the Baggies. But, you know, I thought that Scholes' introduction into the game, even though it was only for that amount of time, he had a couple big tackles. He got them back into a rhythm again, and pretty soon you saw United on the ball again. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, what a couple of substitutions to have. You know, you think about, you know, you bring Paul Scholes and Robin Van Persie off the bench. You're not struggling, Todd, are you? Yeah, no. I mean, Paul Scholes, it's another reason why, you know, Scholes came out of his retirement last year. He's perhaps not had the impact yet, you know, that he had, you know, towards the end of last season. But, you know, he's the type of player that comes on and dictates the tempo of the game. He speeds the game up when it needs to be, you know, when it needs to be sped up. And he also slows the game down. And I think just because of his technique and his decision-making quality, he really, he had the calmness to that midfield that maybe a young, inexperienced Cleverley, you know, probably doesn't have that type of skill set. You know, Cleverley is going to be, you know, you look at the type of profile, Scholes is going to sit there and stroke the ball around and dictate play, and Cleverley is probably going to be the one of the ones that's going to run it. And, yeah, I think, you know, again, you know, it wasn't, you know, I think any coach in their right mind would have thought about those substitutions, right? You know, maybe the game's getting away from you in midfield, you bring Scholes on, and then you know that, you know, you've got Van Persie, you know, in that attacking half of the field, or the attacking third of the field, and you know that he gets a half chance, and, you know, he's got a good chance of finishing the game. You know, exactly the same against Man City, you know, he did nothing for the whole game against Man City, and then comes up with a free kick that, you know, that Nasri bottled. But again, when you got, we keep talking about this, Todd, it's, you know, tactics don't win games, players do, right? And, you know, Robin Van Persie and Paul Scholes are two players that can win games here.
Well, I mean, I think you've hit it right on the head. They just see, you know, Wayne Rooney's not even on the bench. You know, I mean, just the players that they have sitting here. I mean, Ryan Giggs didn't come on. Rio Ferdinand was there. He didn't come on. I mean, just the players that Ferguson has to put out there. But, you know, as you said, the players are the ones that are winning these games, and I think right now United's players are performing very well. I thought Kagawa, you know, his first game since October, I thought he played very well. I mean, he just reminded us that, gosh, here's another guy that United can go to, you know, in midfield. You know, today he was technically playing up front with Danny Welbeck, but really it was more of a 4-5-1, just the way that Kagawa dropped into midfield. And but, you know, and then you can talk about Danny Welbeck as well. I mean, Ferguson's come out and said that the fact that they've got four very good strikers reminds him of the 99 team when they had Cole, York, Teddy Sheringham, and of course Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and you know, having those four strikers to bring on to play at any time is such an advantage. And I thought Danny Welbeck played very well today. And then of course you bring Van Persie on, and you know, and you can see what he created. But United now sits 7 points ahead of Manchester City and the table. And probably the biggest topic of the discussion for the day, Sam, is the return of Vidic in United's clean sheet. Their first in a month and just their fifth of the season. Right now, United's given up 28 goals about midway through the season. They only gave up 33 all of last year. And here they sit on just their fifth clean sheet. But after the 15-month absence of Nemanja Vidic, from the United team, you know, perhaps it's the calming influence that he brings that has been missed the most. You know, his tackling, his commitment, it's definitely something to be talked about, but he made that back four better today for United. Johnny Evans, Patrice Everett, and Chris Smalling, they all played better with him in the lineup than I've seen them play all year, and Alex Ferguson has to be pleased with what he saw today, Sam, from Vidic and his back four.
Well, I mean, again, it's a calming influence, right? He's a top player, so that, with the exception of when he plays against Fernando Torres at times, you know, he adds a calming influence to, you know, to the defence and that back five. You know, we need to make sure we include the goalkeeper when we're talking about, you know, defensive unit, because, you know, when he's in there, he's barking the instruction, he's making the adjustments, he's organising, he's putting the last ditch tackles in, and he's an extremely influential player for Man United, and those stats are pretty staggering. You know, they've conceded 28 goals already this season. But again, you know, I think The dramatic way that United lost the league last year on the last day, down on goal difference, Todd, you know, that struck a nerve with Fergie, right? That's what keeps him so young. He's so competitive. And he said, you know, it was his number one fear to lose the league on goal difference. And he made sure with the purchase of Van Persie and Kagawa that, you know, that wasn't going to happen. I mean, Todd, you know, Van Persie scored 36 goals in the Premier League last.
Well, he's got 13 so far this year just in the Premier League, 17 in all competitions. And, you know, right now, he just, with his goal today, he came level with Michu from Swansea, top of the league. And, you know, I could see him winning the Golden Boot once again in the Premier League. It's just, I mean, the goal today was just, it was just phenomenal. I mean, you know, he just gives them such a different dimension and really, you know, takes a lot of pressure, obviously, off the guys like Wayne Rooney and younger players like a Danny Welbeck, and really just brings just an absolute touch of class into that team, which I think it's going to be very difficult for anybody to have to face him. Just a little update on Arsenal Newcastle, the 82nd minute now. Arsenal is still up 4-3 in that game. We'll keep you posted on that. Could be, as Sam said, as we were getting ready for the show here, could be the second time in a week Newcastle scores three goals and doesn't win, which would be extremely unlucky. But we are going to talk about Alex Ferguson a little bit later here in the show, and talk about his, you know, you talk about that competitiveness and that, you know, he just seems that, you know, he's just about to turn 71 years old, and he just seems to have that. That fire is just there. You know, I haven't seen him this animated, you know, in years. I mean, when Chicharito scored the game winner against Newcastle, I mean, Ferguson jumped on his assistant. He was in the air. I mean, both his legs were up. He had his legs wrapped around him. I mean, I don't even see how a man at 70 years old can even do that. I think I'll die if I try that at 70 years old. But you can just see the passion that he is approaching this season with, and the result that he's approaching the season with. And, you know, I think, obviously, he's a huge part of what Manchester United is. And I think his players are following suit with what he's displaying.
Yeah, I mean, Fergie is Man United, isn't he? You know, he's going to have a big say on who comes in when he leaves. And, yeah, he's very passionate. He's extremely competitive, Todd. You know, and he's got a will to win that sort of stems from some of the things that happened to him when he was a player, in terms of some of the disappointment of being dropped for a Scottish Cup final for Rangers. You know, that really struck a nerve. And that really has sort of laid the foundation, by all accounts, for, you know, his sort of success as a manager, along with, you know, other things, of course, but...
Speaking of Ferguson's playing days, did you see late in the second half there the ball got fired out of bounds and he took a pretty good touch there. Settled that ball, Ferguson, right there. It was very wet on the sidelines. He's in flat shoes. He's able to take a very good touch with his right foot and bring it down. It was very impressive. I think he's still got something there. We're going to move on to the other team in Manchester right now, Manchester City, where Edin Dzeko scored twice in the first 5 minutes, but Samir Nasri was sent off just before halftime, and this was perhaps, well, up until this Arsenal second half with Newcastle, it was probably the most exciting match of the day, and we'll be up there. Despite playing a man down for the entire second half, City was able to score twice in that half. Sergio Aguero chipped, and a third goal from Dzeko that was ruled an own goal when it bounced off the post and off Norwich goalkeeper Mark Bunn's back and into the net. Russell Martin did score twice in the second half for Norwich, but it wasn't enough as they dropped their third straight Premier League match and slid down to 11th in the table. I think Sam City will consider themselves pretty lucky to escape a tough Norwich team playing for an entire half, a man down after Nasri was sent off. You know, Nasri was upended by Sebastian Bissong there, got up, went face-to-face with the Norwich defender, kind of put his head into the face. Not quite a headbutt, Sam, but, you know, enough to lead the ref to draw a straight red. What do you think about Nasri and his antics there and the position that he's put his team in to play, you know, an entire half a man down against a very, very good team in Norwich?
Well, I think if Man City didn't play that game, I think Nasri would have been hung, drawn, and quartered off. You know, and on the flip side, you know, I think this could be a turning point for City. You know, similar to United in the sense that they haven't really played that well this season. But the difference between those two teams, in my opinion, is Robin Van Persie and Man United's ability to score goals right now, you know, in situations where they're not playing well. You know, the individuals are winning in games as opposed to, the, you know, the collective team effort. Yeah, I mean, that was a tough draw. You know, so, you know, a tough place to go in Norwich. They beat Man United at home. They beat Arsenal at home. And, yeah, I mean, I'm sure Mancini will be very, very pleased. I think the most pleasing thing for them, Todd, is the fact that they've gone to a tough place like Norwich and they've scored four goals. You know, he's been very public in his criticism of his board recently, and the fact that they've not been, you know, scoring goals from the chances they've been creating. You know, I tend to agree with that. I think that's the difference between the two Manchester teams right now, the ability to you know, to finish the opportunities that they create. And
he's got to be happy about Dzeko scoring, you know, starting the match and scoring and having a good game. Dzeko typically doesn't score until the last 5 minutes of the match, not in the first 5 minutes of the match. And, and, you know, he's got to be happy with that performance from Edin Dzeko there. You know, like I said, he basically had a hat trick, even though the third goal was, I think, a little bit harshly ruled an own goal. I don't know. Would you think that would you want to find Dzeko? I want that goal. I've hit the ball off the post. It's hit the keeper in the back and gone in. I mean, I would want that goal. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think you've got to give that to the striker. He's created the space for the shot. He's hit the post and, you know, ricocheted back off the goalkeeper. I think you've got to give that goal to the forward.
Yeah. Speaking of goals, Arsenal has just scored two more times in the last 3 minutes. and it's now 6-3 in the 87th minute. So we'll give you the full report on that game once that's finished. But unbelievable things happening there between Arsenal and Newcastle. And Newcastle is now sure to lose another game after scoring three goals. Unlucky for them. We're going to move on to the first game that was played this morning, Tottenham-Sunderland. Sunderland looking to follow up their Boxing Day win over Man City. Looked to be heading in that direction when Johnny O'Shea found it out on 40 minutes. And they did go into halftime with the lead, but what a disastrous first 6 minutes of the second half it proved to be for Sunderland. Carlos Soler headed into his own net, defending a corner in the 48th minute, just right after halftime. And Aaron Lennon, a little bit of fortune for him, misplayed a touch right off of Johnny O'Shea. And next thing he knows, he finds himself in on goal and finishes things off in the 51st, and it finishes 2-1. DVD, as we have come to love and know him here on from the touchline for 90 minutes, sitting third in the table right now, Sam. And, you can say what you will about DVD, and we certainly do say what we want to about DVD, but here he sits in third. Any thoughts on Tottenham and that victory today?
Well, the fact that you don't hear about him being sacked and you don't hear about discontent from the change room means that the team is winning games. And, you know, this is I think we said a time ago, this is a big season, I think, or this Tottenham role for DVD is perhaps the biggest job of his life, because he obviously failed at Chelsea, and whether whether you say that's fair or not, that he was fired, is irrelevant. He went there and failed, and it's on his record, and history will show that he spent a limited amount of time at that club, and because the results weren't going the way, regardless of what his role was, in terms of from the ownership. So this is I think Newcastle, Tottenham have done well recently. They look like they've got goals in them. He seems to have tweaked the formation a little bit now so that he's got both Alba and Foe on the field. And, I think that makes him a little bit more of a goal threat. The sexy soccer talk, it's not being replaced, but now I think, the sexy soccer has got a bit more of an end product potentially now with Alba and Foe, playing in that attacking third for them. It'll be interesting to see, it could be arguably said, Scott, that, AVB has made that Tottenham team slightly better than it was under Harry Redknapp. Especially considering the players they lost. Van der Vaart was a massive player for Tottenham. As was our little Croatian friend that went to Real Madrid, Modric. Losing two players from any team, Todd, it's going to have a massive impact upon the style of play and certainly the results. In Modric and Van der Vaart, they had two players that could score goals from nothing. They could create chances for themselves. And, to be said that Spurs may be a better team now. They may be a better unit than they were under Harry Redknapp, and I think that's credit to DVD, AVB, or COD, whatever you want to call him, for the work he's done.
Well, they're probably watching enough video on what they're doing to get enough ideas of how they want to play and what they want to do. So, it's good though. It's good to have another team playing well in the Premier League, and Tottenham certainly is doing that. We're going to move on to Stoke Southampton, where. Gosh, Southampton looked really, they looked assured of jumping out of the relegation zone, leading 3-1 until the 67th minute, and then playing the final 21 minutes a man up against really the best defensive team in the Premier League, having scored three goals on Stoke at home, where they had only given up four in the entire season so far. But a sublime 30-yard volley from Cameron Jerome just stunned the visitors and assured the point for Stoke. And, Southampton is now just right on the verge of that relegation zone with a game in hand and looking to jump out. But it's got to be disappointing for Southampton going in there, having a 3-1 lead, with about 20 so minutes to go and not being able to hold that. But, here comes Stoke again. And these are the kind of performances, when teams can do these kinds of things, Sam, when they can get a point out of a game like that, when – that's going to come. Those kinds of things will come up huge when you get to the end of the season. As Manchester United and Manchester City found out last year. Any thoughts on that game?
Well, I'm biased, Todd, because I absolutely detest everything that comes out of Stoke, including Tony Pulis and his style of play. But you got to give them a little bit of a pat on the back. They're organised. I think they've got more 6'5" players, Todd, than anybody else in the country. So you wonder what they're feeding them at Stoke.
Kenwyn Jones is sure a handful, and he got another goal today. I think he's scored in three or four consecutive matches now. But, yeah, he is a handful, and they are massive. We're going to talk to Aaron Hyde, the goalkeeper coach of the Chicago Fire, here in a bit, just at noon in about 40 minutes. And he spent about 3.5 weeks in England here and was just watching some training and whatnot. And he spent some time at Stoke, and he told me when I was talking to him the other day that Tony Pulis runs every single one of his sessions. Not one assistant runs any part of any session at Stoke. And Pulis is, maybe he doesn't trust his staff or what have you. But he even said that it goes as far that if for some reason Pulis can't be there on the day for training, they just cancel training. He won't have them train with anybody else but him. And I thought that was I kind of had two thoughts on that. I thought, good on him. You know, he does his work, and obviously they've done well, but, gosh, have a little trust in your staff, man.
Well, you would think so, wouldn't you? I mean, that's really surprising to hear. Some managers are more hands-on than others. You know, you've got David Moyes that tends to be hands-on, so Alex Ferguson and Redknapp that are not so much hands-on in terms of the training, but they float around the training facility, and, the players know that the Hawkeye is around, but interesting. It's not so much a unique style. I watched the Liverpool game, Todd, on Boxing Day, and I was almost drowned out from the amount of coaching that Tony Pulis was doing on the sideline. So, I sort of sent a few texts to a few friends saying, what do you do in practice if he spends all his time coaching the game? And, I think he's certainly a coach, Todd, as much as I don't like him. Professional level, that I feel that he gets the best out of his players and a little bit more. He doesn't trust his support staff. Kenny Brown, I think, Kenny Brown's one of his assistant coaches there. And, I think he's got a very controlled and disciplined team, not in it. And I think that's a little bit about where he came from in terms of his background. And also, it says a lot, Todd, about his team. The style of play, reflects his character, Todd, and, perhaps he feels that he's the only person that can get his team to play that one, controlling
well,
his training
plan. Yeah, I agree, and Stoke sits, eighth in the table. They're just 6 points out of a Champions League spot, and, if you look at their record, they've only won 6 matches. They've drawn 11 times more than anybody else in the Premier League, and they've only lost 3 matches. So there's obviously a resolve to the side, and as you well know, Sam, that kind of thing comes straight from the manager and bleeds into the team. So looks good. By the way, just another little update. Now 7-3 Arsenal, and they're in injury time right now, so we'll get to that game here in a minute once it ends. Moving on to the disaster that is Aston Villa. I can't say that I'm upset to see this happening to Aston Villa. 3-0 lost to Wigan today. Wigan climbed out of the relegation zone and left Aston Villa right on the brink of dropping into relegation with this commanding 3-0 win. Villa's now been outscored 15-0 in the past 3 matches after an 8-0 loss to Chelsea, 4-0 defeat to Spurs, and now this 3-0 defeat to Wigan. And, Sam, is Paul Lambert, who left Norwich in controversy over the summer, could he be on his way out already at Villa here?
Well, yeah, you do wonder. I mean, it's always interesting, Todd, when you see a big result like the spank and they got at Chelsea. You wonder whether you wonder what that does to the morale in the group. And the only thing as a coach and a player you want is you just hope that your team, bounces back straight away, Todd. And you hope that you can get a result on the board or stop the decline very, very quickly. And unfortunately, they haven't been able to do that. They've been on the back end of a couple of really poor results, man. Unbelievably, Todd. They don't actually have the record for the most goals conceded in 3 games. It lies with Wigan, who in 2010 conceded 18 goals in 3 games, which is incredible. And obviously, Martinez continued in his job there and has done, what a lot of people would say is had a successful time at Wigan. I think, Aston Villa is almost similar in its position in terms of Liverpool. He's trying to, build from the ground up. He's trying to give the youth a chance, and that may be due to the mismanagement of funds in the past. I think Lambert is a decent manager, and I think this is going to be a massive test for him. I haven't had a chance to see the interviews yet after the games. It'll be interesting to see what he has to say, about the performances. But it's at this level, Todd. At most levels, it's about moments in the game. In the game in midweek on Boxing Day, there was a chance where Benteke, you know, if he rolled the ball back, you know, a yard better into the, you know, if he pulled that ball back, you know, about, you know, and she was a bit more accurate with that, it could have been a 1-1 game last,
right.
You know, in Boxing Day. And of course, it'd be, you know, a yard here means that then the game ends up becoming, you know, they don't score the chance, and then straight up the other end, you know, Tottenham score, you know, from the same attack. So, yeah, it's an interesting time for Aston Villa. I don't think he's going to get sacked.
Interestingly enough, you know, they had been on great form. I mean, they lost 5-0 to City on November 17th. But after that, they ran off a streak of 6 or 7 games here, including the last two before they started this bad run. They beat North City 4-1 in the Capital One Cup, and then they beat Liverpool 3-1 on December 15th and before this all happened. And that was a great run they were on. But this is just, I mean, unbelievable. I mean, 8-0 to Chelsea was a terrible result. And now, you know, here they are. They're just sitting right on the verge of that relegation zone. And I can't see them coming away from that, you know, getting themselves out of that with this form that they're in. We are just about to get to the final. It is a final now. Arsenal 7 and Newcastle United 3. Unbelievable. We're going to get to that here just in a second as some information comes available to us. Two other games to talk about, though, in the Premier League. Reading 1-0 over West Ham. Swansea 2-1 over Fulham. And that pretty much rounds out, aside from what we're about to talk about here with Arsenal-Newcastle. And let's just talk about it. You know, you've got we had Theo Walcott on a hat trick today. Lucas Podolski with the goal, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain with the goal, Oliver Giroud with 2 goals in the span of 3 minutes. Sam, in the 69th minute, Demba Ba scored to equalize 3-3. And at that point, with 21 minutes to go in the game, at that point, there was another 5 goals scored. Just really unbelievable. Of what they were able to do there, Arsenal. And, you know, with all the talk of Theo Walcott potentially, you know, signing himself away, going somewhere else, how do you think this helps Arsenal? They're on a good run of form right now. How do you think this helps them in keeping Theo Walcott and maybe even being able to bring somebody else in the January transfer window that's going to open up here very soon?
Well, it's funny, Todd, because I remember a conversation we had on our show before we signed off for the holiday break. And, you know, we were talking about, you know, the demise of Arsenal, and you were asking whether or not, you know, Wenger could still be in a job. And, you know, they tied 0-0 with Aston Villa, 1-1 with Everton, and lost 2-0 at Swansea. You know, managed to get a 2-0 result against West Brom. But then, you know, after that conversation, talked about, well, you know, they got knocked out of the, you know, Capital Cup by Bradford. So all of a sudden you feel that the, you know, the wheels are falling off. But in typical sort of Arsenal style, so they turn around the following week and spank Reading 5-2. They grind out a win against Wigan 1-0. And, of course, they've, you know, they've given Newcastle a bit of a hiding today. So, you know, I think the true test here will be for Arsenal is if they can continue with this form. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they go and lose to Southampton this weekend, but then end up, you know, beating Man City in a couple of weeks' time at the Emirates. So, you know, having said that, Todd, Arsenal have been, you know, inconsistent this year. They've scored a ton of goals in a lot of games. You know, but they're, you know, they're sitting 3 points off, you know, third position. And, you know, that's what Arsenal's all about. Arsenal's all about getting in that top four, securing the funds for the Champions League, and, you know, trying to sell on some of the players they've developed over time.
Well, and Arsenal now are sitting in fifth spot, tied on points with Everton and West Bromwich Albion. Both Everton and Arsenal, however, do have a game in hand on West Bromwich Albion. But let's talk about Theo Walcott. And I have to be honest, I've never seen the hype. I've never been a believer of the hype of Theo Walcott. I've never really felt that he was the player that that all the hype kind of suggested that he was. How do you see Theo Walcott? And you know, he says he prefers to be deployed as a central striker. However, I think it's quite obvious that he's better in wide positions. But in an attempt to keep him right now, Wenger is playing him central to kind of give him what he wants. And obviously today he rewarded him. What are your thoughts on him?
Well, it's an issue, wasn't it? You know, people seem to forget, Todd, that Phil Walcott's only 23 years old. He's been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
You know, thrust into the limelight by Sven-Göran Eriksson taking him to the World Cup, you know, when he hadn't even started a game for Arsenal. You know, he's still very young. And if you think about, you know, Thierry Henry, you know, player of similar profile, incredible speed, but arguably, you know, Thierry Henry got better skill, better touch and technique. But, you know, the thing that I really like about Theo Walcott, Todd, is his ability to finish. He's so composed, Todd, in front of goal, it's frightening. And he's always had that. I remember a hat-trick he scored for England against Croatia, very, very composed in positions coming off the flank. And, you know, now that Wenger's given him an opportunity in the centre, he's popping up with a few goals. But, you know, by all accounts, you know, Walcott is off, you know, regardless of what, you know, Wenger talks about. You know, I think if he hadn't signed a contract by now, Todd, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, I think if he was going to stay, he would have signed it by now.
Well, and the rumour is, you know, he's a Liverpool fan. He's got the same agent as Brendan Rodgers. And rumour from back home through a couple of sources I have is that, you know, Brendan Rodgers has guaranteed him he'll play as a central striker, and Liverpool have offered him £50,000 a week more than Arsenal are willing to offer. So it will be interesting to see what happens there. The fact he's not signed a contract, we're 2 days away now from 2013, you know, is a big signing. You know, Wenger could almost be put himself in a very, very tough position here by playing Walcott up front, because if Walcott keeps scoring goals from that position, Todd, it's going to be another player that he's going to have to replace that scored, you know, 25-plus goals in the season.
But another way to look at it, Sam, is that, you know, I think that his stock just went up today, scoring these three goals, and, you know, he's got a couple goals here in the last few games, and, you know, maybe that ups the price, and maybe, you know, even though Wenger has been very adamant in the press that he's going to keep Theo Walcott, maybe he knows, you know, maybe he knows that he's gone, and, you know, he's playing him hoping he's going to get goals so they can get more money out of him and, you know, money out of the sale of this player and hope to bring in somebody else, you know. You just never know, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think you see so much of that anymore, Todd, partly because, you know, the game is governed off the field by the agents, right? So, you know, Arsenal thinking, well, you know what, if we can get, it's a catch-22. We keep Walcott and he guarantees us a top four position. We sell him and get, you know, 5 or 6 million, you know, at the very most, because he's only got so much of his contract to go. But then, you know, the buying club then has to pay 5 or 6 million for him. But, you know, his agent's saying to Walcott, well, you know, that 5 or 6 million is really yours. You know, hold on till June, and instead of going now for 90,000 or 100,000 a week, we'll save the buying club 5-6 million, and we'll just put that into your wages and my commission. It's part and parcel of the way the game's gone, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, and unfortunately, I think everybody's making money on these transfers, managers, agents, players, clubs. I mean, I think there's too many hands in the pot, and I think it's become a little bit too diluted. But, you know, it is what it is. This is the modern game, and this is what we're dealing with. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Theo Walcott. You know, for me, never having thought he was a great player, if he would just go to Liverpool, that would be just fine with me.
I would take Walcott at Liverpool, absolutely, Todd. Because his pace, what he does in terms of creating space for other players, you know, it's not something that, you know, people think about in terms of value, but it absolutely is. If you think you've got, you know, Walcott dragging defenders around in that attacking third and creating space for players like Luis Suarez and Gerrard and, dare I say it, John Joe Shelby, right? It was down there, isn't it? The space that he can create for Suarez and Gerrard and Raheem Sterling is, you know, it's probably worth, you know, $5, $6, $7 a season, you know, possibly even more. I'd love to see him at Liverpool. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how that goes. Just a little preview for the two games coming tomorrow. We've got Everton at Chelsea at Goodison Park. Chelsea's on a very good run of form here, but that should be a good match, I think. You know, Everton obviously, you know, right at the top of the table there as well. I think it's going to be a great match. Looking forward to that match. Any thoughts on the Everton-Chelsea match at Goodison Park tomorrow, Sam?
Everton, very, very, very tough at home, right? Very, very strong at home. Don't lose a lot of games at home. Very well organized. You know, you've got the fans there really close to the field. You know, it's somewhat of a fortress. You know, they haven't won all their games there. It's actually, you know, they picked up quite a few draws at home this year, but they've not lost, you know. And you know, this is a different Everton team to one that we've seen before. You know, Ken Wright's obviously given Moyes some money, and Moyes is, you know, like all managers that have got very, very limited funds, it's done very well. I think that the boy that he's picked up from Belgium, Morales, is a great signing. I think Jelavic that they picked up in January last year is a great signing for them. And obviously we're looking at maybe Fellaini coming back tomorrow into the team after, you know, suspension and injury. And, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a tough one to call tough, you know. You would think now that how Chelsea are playing, and Benitez seems to have installed a little bit of his methods, you know, they're a lot more defensively organized and committed than they were, you know, under Di Matteo. And obviously they're scoring goals for fun at the moment. So I'm sure it's going to be a good game. It's a really tough game to call tomorrow. And it's a big test for Chelsea.
Luckily, we're going to get to that later because that is one of the games in the game predictor. So you can think on that here for a good hour and then give me your answer at the end of the show. The other game tomorrow is one that I'm sure, Sam, you will be paying close attention to as your beloved Liverpool, the Reds, visit Loftus Road and Harry Redknapp and Queen's Park Rangers. You know, I think this is a game, this is a must-win game for both teams, and because of that, I'm really looking forward to this match. I think Liverpool, you know, after what happened to them on Boxing Day and just their results over the last few weeks here, they need to get a result, whether they're at home or on the road. It doesn't matter at this point. They need a result, and there's no question that the Queen's Park Rangers, if they are going to indeed get out of this relegation zone, they need to start getting points, and they need to start getting points quickly. I'm not sure 1 point's going to do tomorrow. They need 3 points. They're on 10 points. They need to get they're 8 points away from getting out of this relegation zone, and you know, this is a must-win for both teams, and I'm really looking forward to the match, Sam.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I think the best thing about this game for Liverpool is the fact that how poorly they play against Stoke. You know, and you know, in Liverpool, you know, they've been very, very inconsistent this year, which you can expect with a relatively young and a young squad with a lot of youthful players, and you know, obviously trying to blend a new type of style of play. You know, it's not exclusive to the old Liverpool style, but they're a little bit more methodical in how they approach the game. You know, they're susceptible to the counter-attack in terms of how they set up. But, you know, I think, just looking at QPR, I don't think they can keep Luis Suarez and Raheem Sterling quiet. And, you know, I just don't see where the goals are going to come from, Todd, unless it's a set piece. You just, you know, you've got a lot of busy players there. You've got Jamie Mackey, you've got, you know, Granero in midfield, you know, you know, Carabat in midfield, you know, but you just don't see where the goals are going to come from on a regular basis, you know. And, you know, I think Liverpool might end up slaughtering QPR tomorrow. I think they're going to be up for this game. And I think if Liverpool can get an early goal, Todd, and they can hold on to it and build on it, I think, you know, this could be a bit of a spanking for QPR. And if that's the case, you know, QPR, you know, they needed a miracle anyway. They're going to need beyond a miracle if they get spanked this weekend. Because if they go into into 2013 and they're still bottom of the league, you know, I think we're looking at a very, very tough position from the B. And the only way they're going to get themselves out of that is the demise of other teams. They're going to hope that the Aston Villas and the Wiggins get dragged into it. You know, but you know, they're going to need to be picking somebody up that's going to score them 20 goals between now and the end of the season. I think it's the only way we can see them picking up, you know, staying in the league.
Well, it's certainly, yeah, it's going to be, I think this is a huge game for them, and two great games tomorrow. It's going to be great, and sets up another great week. You know, got games on New Year's Day and some more games on January 2nd, so it should be good. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady on From the Touchline for 90 minutes. We're on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. Listeners can call into the show today and talk with us live at 760-283-0846. You can text in at 360-920-7273. From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, highest-rated soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android, iPhone, and the iPad. I did also, before we go on, I just wanted to give a congratulations out to my co-host, Sam Lady, who is now a married man. Sam, congrats, and everything went well, I suppose. You're still with us, so good wedding.
Yeah, fantastic, mate. Yeah, it was magical, Toph. According to the guest, it was a magical wedding. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, very happy. Had a great night. You know, close, very close friends and family there. And then a little bit of a, you know, a quiet party the following night. But yeah, great time. Great time.
Fantastic. Well, congrats, and you know, obviously, I wish you and Kim all the best, and looking forward to maybe some miniature ladies arriving at some point here. We'll see how that goes. Speaking of the holiday spirits, we're going to get into Alex Ferguson and his week, his busy week with the referees and the press, and showed his Christmas spirit when a couple instances. First, when he claimed that Robin Van Persie could have been killed by a ball that deflected off of his head. Which I thought was very comical, but he absolutely ruined and belittled Newcastle's Alan Pardew in a press conference a few days after United came back three separate times to defeat Newcastle 4-3 on Boxing Day. Pardew was critical after the match that Ferguson had a go at Mike Dean, the referee Mike Dean, along with the fourth official and the assistant referee at halftime over a controversial goal that was allowed in the first half. Ferguson was in no mood for criticism, however, especially from a manager that was suspended earlier in the year for shoving an assistant referee. Ferguson claiming that, and I quote, "It's unfortunate, but I'm the manager of the most famous club in the world, not a wee club in the Northeast." He followed that up by also claiming, I quote again, "Alan Pardew has come out and criticized me. He is the worst at harassing referees. He shoves them and makes a joke of it. How he can criticize me is unbelievable. He forgets the help I gave him, by the way." Sam, what do you make of the row between Ferguson and Pardew, and how did you see things play out on Boxing Day? Do you believe the FA should have taken action here against Ferguson, and do you believe Pardew even has a leg to stand on?
Well, I believe that the FA should have taken a stand, for one, you know, in terms of the management of the game. Fergie actually held up the start of the second half. You know, it's inconceivable. It's something you could see at the, you know, the youth level in this country where, you know, a coach is berating a young referee, and as a result of that, they end up, you know, starting the game late. So, you know, there he should have been, you know, held accountable for that. But, yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, Todd, you know, you expect referees to make these decisions, and, you know, you just wonder if maybe a little bit of pressure, maybe Fergie thought that, you know, he's a master of mind games, as they say, and certainly, I'm not sure mind games is the right thing to say, but he's certainly the master of influence. And, you know, you could be said that, you know, maybe him berating the referees like that and trying to let the referee know that, you know, Fergie was very, very clear that he made a mistake. And, you know, you wonder how that may influence, you know, other decisions in the game in the second half. And, you know, certainly other games in the future that referee may, you know, may manage. So, yeah, I think if anything, there's a lack of consistency in the FA. You know, if an incident happens off the ball with a player and it doesn't go in the referee's report, you know, does it or doesn't it become part of the FA's responsibility to step in? You know, the same thing with managers. In terms of Pardew, does he have the leg to stand on? Well, no, but, you know, I don't think he does, because obviously he was found guilty at the start of the season and, you know, he shoved the ref. You know, he wasn't quite the classic Paolo Di Canio situation of a couple of years ago where the referee ended up doing a bit of a cartwheel. It certainly wasn't as bad as that. But, you know, I certainly think that, you know, he's, you know, it's within his rights, Todd, to bring that up, because he perhaps felt that Sir Alex Ferguson, or Sir Alex Grinch, as you may well know, it may have influenced the game, you know, above and beyond that decision in the first half.
Well, I mean, I'm going to disagree with you here, because I feel that as a coach, you know, Ferguson's got the right to question a referee. And, you know, I just feel that, you know, here he is, and he's, and, you know, obviously the goal was disallowed, the decision was made, but, you know, he had a go at the ref, and I think a lot of coaches do have a go at the ref, I know that I certainly do, but, you know, he had his go, and he kind of let it go at that point. You know, he followed up with the assistant ref and whatnot. I just feel that, you know, coaches should be able to have a go at the ref. It's an emotional thing. You know, guys are emotionally invested in this game, as are the referees. And, you know, without knowing exactly what was said there, I think that Ferguson has every right to question the referee. I know the FA is cracking that one, is wanting to crack down on that. And then in terms of Alan Pardew, who I've never been a big fan of, You know, I think that he should just concentrate on his team. He doesn't need to be worrying about what Alex Ferguson is doing. You know, he's now lost two games straight where he's given up, you know, now he's given up 11 goals in two games. Maybe he should be spending a little more time worrying about his back four and worrying about what Alex Ferguson is saying. I think that, you know, if anything's to be said from Alan Pardew in that game is that as a coach, he dropped three leads in that game. And so, you know, I don't think he has really any leg to stand on at all, not just based on what he did earlier in the year pushing that referee. The referee was obviously more coordinated than the one Paulo Canio pushed a few years back because he was able to stay sturdy and stay on his feet. Yeah. But, you know, even if I take my allegiance to Manchester United out of this and it was any other manager doing this, you know, I think we'd still I would still feel the same way. Sam, we've got a caller here that's called in. I can't believe two shows in a row he's got a call in. I'm just going to go to the phone line here and see what we've got here. You're live on the air with Sam Lady and Todd Stauber here on From the Touchline for 90 minutes. And what would you like to talk about today? Hello? Hello, is that caller there? Okay, we don't have that caller apparently. Well, I guess we'll wait to see if they want to come on. But anyways, back to what I was saying. You know, now, of course, Arsene Wenger, he had to just chime in and get involved, criticize Ferguson, just continuing his ongoing row with the Scot. And, you know, I thought it was pretty funny, you know, that Arsene Wenger chimed in as well because, I mean, here's another guy who's, you know, he's booting water balls into getting sent into the stands. You know, he's a guy that he's abusing referees constantly, Arsene Wenger is. And I just can't, you know. I mean, at least his team is playing well, and obviously they just smashed Alan Pardew, but, you know, so he's got a little more ground there to say something, and he's done more at Arsenal in the Premier League than Alan Pardew will ever do in the Premier League. So he's got a little more ground to stand on there. But, you know, I'm going to stand behind Ferguson and any coach that wants to voice their opinion to a referee. You know, I don't think, you know, obviously he didn't get physical without knowing what was said. I don't really have a problem with it, but, you know, we can agree to disagree on that point, Sam.
Yeah, I love it, Todd. Honestly. It's, you know, Wenger and Fergie, you know, they're sort of becoming the grumpy old men, right? They're just sort of bickering across the fence from each other about, you know, cutting their grass and their flowers and everything else. It's hilarious. And, you know, part of it, Todd, it's set up by the press. You know, the press come out and they'll say, okay, so what do you think? Interesting, you know, what do you think about Sonic's comments? And, you know, that sort of that stokes the fire.
Right.
It's really, you know, I think they've got a lot of respect for each other, partly for what they've both done for the Premier League.
Ferguson made a good point that, you know, and the media did make a meal of this whole event. I mean, you know, they're looking for something to talk about. And they made an absolute meal out of it. And, you know, Ferguson kind of played right into it and said, all right, you want to make a meal of it? Then I'm going to call Newcastle a wee club in the Northeast, which I just thought was, it was surprising to hear him say that, but I just had to get a great laugh. I'm going to try to get this caller on one more time here and see if we have a human being that actually wants to talk about something with us here. Hello, you're live with Todd Stauber and Sam Lady here on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. What is it that you'd like to talk about today? Hello. Okay, they're officially not there, so we're just going to move on here.
Is that Stephen Hawking playing silly games again?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was Alan Pardew calling, and we got a bad connection from Newcastle, so... Not exactly sure what's going on there, but, you know, as far as just talking about Alex Ferguson again, you know, we just, like I said earlier in the show, I think that we're seeing him, and you hit it on the head, you know, the sting of losing that last year on goal differential, the sting of losing the league last year to City, and really to Roberto Mancini as well. I think it's just, he's just got a different bite about him this year, and you know, he wants it. It's very clear that he wants this for his team, and, you know, he did go out, and he obviously got Ben Percy and Kagawa, and, you know, he just seems to have just a chip on his shoulder in the way that he's going about things. And, you know, I was glad to see this all happen, not only because it was amusing, but as a United fan, I like to see him getting all riled up, Sam.
Yeah, he's a character, Fergie. You know, the older he gets, the more respect I have for him. I certainly like you know, he certainly has influenced referees and influenced the game on and off the field, you know, positively. And, you know, the old Fergie tapping his watch, you know, I'm surprised that actually wasn't his statue, Todd, that they erected outside, you know, Old Trafford. I thought it would have been a picture of Fergie tapping his watch, maybe with a slice of pizza on top of his head, but that wasn't to be. He's obviously added a lot to the game on and off the field. He's a master manipulator, whether it comes to officials and players and, you know, referees and, you know, what he's done for the Premier League. You know, he's the most successful manager ever, you know, in any league and in probably any sport in the world. So we can't look past that yet, but he's a fierce competitor. He's a terrible loser.
He is a terrible loser. And speaking of Arsene Wenger, I was watching the press conference where he was criticizing Ferguson, and gosh, Wenger looks like he's aged about 20 years in the last month. It's unbelievable. I think he needs to go back to France and hit a spa or get a facial or something, because he looked absolutely awful. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, the strain of working in the Premier League and... You know, I think, you know, the pressure, Todd, that at that level, you know, takes its toll. You know, you look how quickly you had a young, fresh Jose Mourinho, you know, and he's always full of life and positive and, again, a master manipulator. And, you know, two seasons in the Premier League and all of a sudden, you know, he looks like a badger. The streaks of grey start popping up. It's a very, very tough league to play in, and it's a very, very tough league to manage in. And, you know, it takes its toll. You know, it's a high pressure situation for, you know, every week, you know, for 10 months of the year. So, I don't know how these guys do it. I know how, you know, how disappointed I get after a bad weekend at the office, aka on the field. I can't imagine what it's like under the scrutiny from some of these Premier League managers. You know, you finish the game, you've got a camera shoved under your face. You know, and all of a sudden, you know, a day later, you've got a camera shoved under your face talking about situations like Alex Ferguson. And the next thing you know, you've got a camera under your face the next day in preparation for the next game. It's a very, very, I think it's one of the reasons why we see managers now looking fitter than they have before, because I think they need you for their help. With the exception of somebody like Sam Allardyce and big Martin Yol. You know, most of these managers in the Premier League are, you know, relatively fit now. I think that's due to the demands of the game.
My biggest worry with Sam Allardyce is that his head is going to get bigger and that he's not going to be able to hold it on his body and it's just going to topple off of his body. That's my biggest worry there.
Yeah, I think that's what they want Andy Carroll in, just to support him. Andy Carroll may actually have a bigger head than Sam Allardyce.
Yeah, no, I hear you. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. We're on Blog Talk Radio and backsportspage.com. Listeners can call into the show and talk with us, or not talk with us, as the last caller did, at 760-283-0846. You can also text in at 360-920-7273. The show today is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the highest-rated soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. My Soccer Trainer is available on Android, iPhone, and iPad. We're just a few minutes away from Aaron Hyde, of the Chicago Fire coming on. We're just about 3 minutes away. And while we're waiting, I just wanted to touch very, very briefly on Tito Villanueva. Did I pronounce that right, Sam?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, Tito.
Tito, yeah, we'll just go with Tito. And his recently, you know, he's renewed his battle with cancer and just had surgery for the second time. Here in about a year and a half on a saliva gland. The surgery seems to have gone well. He's saying he's going to be back mid-January. He's going to go through chemotherapy and radiation while he's coaching. And I just had a thought today, you know. Obviously, he went through this, you know, last year. And they just introduced Eric Abidal back into the side after a liver ailment that almost, you know, threatened his life and his career. And I just just the quality of the people that are at Barcelona, just the sheer quality of the people that they have in that club. And I just thought today just about what a wonderful place it must be to work, whether you're a player or on the staff or a coach, just to have those kind of people around, people that are looking adversity right in the face. They're staring death right in the face, and they're just saying no way, and they're just going about their way and doing it. I think Pep Guardiola is a fantastic man, not only a fantastic coach, but a great person, and his influence was obviously, is huge on the team still to this day. But, Tito stepped right in. They're playing better than they ever have. They haven't missed a beat. And they just seem to have quality individuals all around that club, Sam. Any thoughts on that?
Well, it's an institution, isn't it? From top to bottom. And, there's something to be said, Todd, about consistency. When you develop a top to bottom culture like that, everybody in the club understands their role. Everybody is put in positions where they feel that, the players will benefit the most. And, just the fact that they brought their managers in, Todd, from inside the club, time and time again, just to continue with the development philosophy, that the club has had now for a long, long time. It just goes to show, you read a lot about, from Messi and Iniesta and Xavi and those guys, and it's just like a big family. And even when players leave, they want to go back. PK had a little sorte at Man United for 2 or 3 years and ended up going back to his roots. And it's incredible. Nice to see the Real Madrid players, Todd, and the Real Madrid, management posting a little bit on their website about, support for Tito and get well soon. And they, I'm not sure if you remember this, but they had the, get well soon Tito on the front of their jersey and replaced their sponsors for their game, immediately after the news broke about, the real issue with cancer. So, nice to see, Todd, that, the game took a step back there and the thoughts of an incredible individual and Tito is, at the forefront of everyone's minds. And, sometimes, Todd, we can get wrapped up in the derby and the conflict and the pressure and the rivalries between Real Madrid and Barcelona. So that was a really, really nice touch because, in the past they really had a very, very, negative, relationship. Certainly, with the situation with Mourinho last year poking Tito in the eye after one of their games early in the season. So, nice touch from Real Madrid. And, again, great support from inside of Barcelona for Tito.
Yeah, well, and again, it just kind of, it brings us all back to earth. Football is our life. We breathe it. We live it every day. It's our work. It's our passion. It's our love. But at the end of the day, it is just a game. And, here you've got a guy at arguably the biggest club in the world, and he's fighting for his life right now. The fact that he's had to have a second surgery, a tumor has reappeared, just as a human being, that's not a good sign as far as that cancer reappearing. And, he's going to go through chemotherapy and radiation now while he's going to be coaching. And we talk about the pressure of coaching in the Premier League. Well, how about the pressure of coaching Barcelona while you're going through chemotherapy and radiation and the toll that that's going to take on the mind and the body of Tito. But as a player, if I'm a player on that team and my coach, I'm watching him go through this and I'm watching him have the resolve that he has, that's got to be one of the most inspiring things that I could possibly think of as a player, to be playing for a guy going through that.
Well, it's such a close-knit family there, Todd, that, it's almost like they haven't skipped a beat through this process. And that's testament to the structure they've got in place. It's testament to the, the desire and the respect that the players have for the manager. And, it just goes to show how a long-term development approach, coupled with the right people in the right positions, developing that family culture and, recruiting from within and rewarding those people that do good jobs, inside that, whether it's a youth team coach being promoted to the reserve team coach and vice versa. It's, I think Tito's come in. I think he's made Barcelona better. I think they
have to be a better
team. If anything, they look a better team than last year. And,
yeah, I think he's breathed a little bit of fresh air into the side, and I agree. He's done well. Hey, we've got Aaron Hyde here. He's just called into the show, and I'm going to click over to him, and we're going to move on here. Aaron, are you with us here?
Yes. Todd, how are you?
I'm doing good. Aaron Hyde, Chicago Fire goalkeeper coach here live with Todd Stauber and Sam Lady on From the Touchline for 90 minutes. Again, welcome to the show, Aaron. I understand you're down in Portland, maybe doing a little bit of a scouting trip down there, looking for some players?
No, not quite. Just having a little break before we start back up again. Obviously, we've only got another week or so, and the combine is down in Florida, and then we go to the draft in Indianapolis, and then it's preseason.
Yeah, well, it's going to come up pretty quick here. Just going to talk Chicago Fire here for a few minutes with you. Last year, a very good season. You guys finished on 57 points. Unfortunately, lost to Houston there in the first round of the playoffs. But overall, I thought it was, you know, from the perspective of us, it looked like a very good season for you guys. Obviously, Austin Berry, your defender, was named Major League Soccer's Rookie of the Year. And, I think that you and Frank Klopas there got to be pretty happy with the team, and especially yourself working directly with Sean Johnson and the progress that he's made as a goalkeeper.
It was a decent season. I think we were disappointed when we look back at it, how the season ended. You know, I think we our form wasn't good going in down the stretch and into the playoffs. But, you know, like you say, you know, 17 wins, it was positive in that respect, considering, you know, the previous few years we hadn't made the playoffs, you know, and we made a big push and a big emphasis as a whole group to make sure we got back in the playoffs. And obviously Houston got a lot of experience, and they're a tough team, and you know, obviously they went on and lost in the final again, and it's all, you always look back and you think what could have been maybe if we'd have the ball would have maybe bounced our way a little bit more, and we'd have got, you know, a little bit of luck go our way. So,
well, yeah, Houston certainly, they were playing well at the right time. I thought they came on, you know, at the right time at the end of the season, and obviously they proved to be, a tough matchup for both you guys and for Kansas City getting into the final. You guys had a little bit of activity here in the last week. You guys picked the only player in the first stage of the re-entry draft, the MLS, Maicon Santos. Previously played for Toronto and Dallas. He had an option that was declined by DC United. What do you know about this player, and what can you tell us about him?
Well, I think, you know, he's a good prototype center forward for the league. He's big, strong. He's got decent pace. He's a decent finisher. You know, obviously we're a little light up front, and it's an area that we've looked at, and we made a priority to bring in, sort of to strengthen the area. And you know, obviously we got Dominic Adoro and Sergio McDonald, and started a little bit of competition in that department. So I think he'll be a good addition for us. I do. So looking forward to seeing him challenge to play against Serge and obviously Dom. You know, obviously create a little bit more competition there, I think is always good for anyone. And obviously scoring goals is the, you know, most important part of the game.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of scoring goals, your specialty is obviously at the other end of that. How do you feel about the development of Sean Johnson and where he's at right now? Where do you see him in the league when you rate him against the other, the top goalkeepers in the league?
He's still learning. He's young. He's only 23 years old. But you know, he's gone through a lot. It's been, you know, up and down at times for him, which is the nature of it for any goalkeeper. You've only got to look at some of the best goalkeepers in Europe, and you know, it's still the same for them on that level compared to Sean in the MLS. You know, he's got a lot of potential. He's a good lad. He works hard. He's committed to getting better every day when he comes into work, and like to see him sort of really establish himself here in the next year or so. And I don't see why he can't. You know, he's got all the tools. You know, he's technically pretty good, and obviously he's got, you know, incredible athleticism. So if he can put it all together on a regular basis, then he's going to be a very good goalkeeper for in years to come.
Well, we'll see, and if he doesn't become one, then we're gonna get you back on the show and place you under full blame. another move that happened was in the front office with the Chicago Fire this week. Your president Julian Posada stepped down. The club saying that his duties will be taken over by other staff, which kind of leads me to believe he wasn't doing much to begin with. But I'm going to let you talk about that and talk about Posada and see what are your thoughts on that situation?
Obviously, you know, the front office stuff is, you know, is kind of not, you know, separate to the technical staff, and you know we don't get involved in all that sort of thing, and you know the what they do on the front office side really doesn't affect us. Julian, you know, he worked hard from what I saw, and you know is obviously made a decision, a personal decision to step down, maybe look something else. I'm not sure, to be honest with you, Todd. You know, like I said, we don't get involved in that stuff. You know, he worked hard for the club, and obviously they made a decision upstairs to go in a different direction. So the front office staff's great at the Fire, and everyone works hard, and everyone's committed to trying to push the club and move it forward. I'm confident that they've got the right measures in place.
No, that's good. Well, as long as you're not the one getting sacked at this point, I guess that's good for you. So we'll just leave it at that.
Obviously.
Yeah, so you took a trip back home to England here recently. You got to see quite a bit of training sessions. Got to watch quite a bit. I'm gonna let Sam Lady here kind of chime in. And Sam, do you have any questions for Aaron Hyde of the Chicago Fire in terms of his return to the homeland of both of you and his travels and the clubs that he got to go and watch training at?
All right. Good afternoon. How are you, mate?
I'm good. Good. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, I'm just reading a rumor here on Twitter, and it's a vicious one, that Aston Villa are going to petition the Premier League for potentially the use of two goalkeepers in the next fixture on New Year's Day. Any thoughts on that?
Yes, get them in while you can, lads. Get them in while you can. Very funny, funny.
As you know, mate, as a Liverpool fan, I don't very often get a chance to speak down on the opposition, but...
Funny enough, Sam, I'm going to have to interrupt you there. What was the score for Villa's last win?
Well, it was 3-1 against Liverpool, wasn't it?
Oh,
interesting, because that
just checking.
Yeah, that sort of started the demise, didn't it? I think perhaps that the boys thought they knew it better than they were.
Security.
Took the foot off the pedal a little bit. So, you know, as a coach, Aaron, you know, you've probably never been through the type of experience that they're going through right now. You know, what do you think your next moves are? You know, if you're Paul Lambert, you know, I'm not talking about transfer window now, but what do you think your next move is as a manager now? You know, having been through, you know, three results, you know, like they've been through in the last couple of games. I'm a big fan of Paul Lambert. I think he's looking at, you know, the long term, you know, future, and I don't think sacking him would be the right thing to do, because it's been a bit of a manager merry-go-round.
I definitely don't think that's the case. You know, I think if you sack him, it would be a negative move. I don't think across the board anywhere these days is that managers get enough time to establish themselves and get what they want for the club that they're working at. So I don't think that's in Randy Lerner's plans to get rid of him anytime soon. I think they see it as this is a long-term project. I think that they're trying to balance the books from previous managers who have been at Villa and spent a lot of money and paid players a lot of money on the wages. So I think there's a plan in place. I do think we are lacking some experience though as a team, and I think, you know, Paul Lambert will definitely look to address it here once the shopping window opens in a few days' time.
Yeah. What do you think is going to happen with Darren Bent? He's obviously sat there, you know, collecting cobwebs on the bench.
Well, it's an interesting one, because obviously he made him captain. He took the captaincy off him, and then with injuries and whatnot, he's in and out of the matchday squad. So it's an interesting one. There's obviously more going on than what Paul Lambert let on. So it's an interesting situation. Maybe they'll use him to generate revenue to bring in other players. I'm not sure that's going to be an interesting one. It does seem, though, that his time at Villa is limited. It's an interesting one.
I think somebody that comes in on, you know, 20-plus million pounds is up to a big package, you know, across the board, bonuses and wages, and I imagine that, you know, that's a massive strain on the, you know, on the resources at Villa. Chances are we'll probably see Dan Bent moved on in January, but you just wonder how much, you know, somebody is going to be winning the pay for him at the moment with him being out of the side and, you know, not showing any level.
Yeah, I think his record goes before itself, though. I think, you know, he's obviously been up there as the consistent English goal scorer in the Premier League, which is obviously few and far between these days, English players that can score goals. So I think somebody would take a gamble on him. You know, you only got to look at like a Harry Redknapp, but maybe they can get him at the right price. QPR, would maybe take a gamble on him. Obviously, so I see him moving. I think the price will be the other thing more than anything. Does it match Villa's valuation of him, and is somebody prepared to take the gamble?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady here on From the Touchline for 90 Minutes. We're on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. We are talking right now with Aaron Hyde at the Chicago Fire. Listeners, if you have any questions for Aaron, you can call in to the show, 760-283-0846. Aaron, just to let you know, don't get your hopes up there. We've only had one caller in the history of the show, and we actually had one today, but unfortunately the person was unable to speak in any language known to mankind, so we didn't hear anything. It was just blank. So, but listeners, if you do want to call and talk to Aaron, he is here and he's ready for your questions. I've got another question for you, though. It was earlier this week, Roger Espinoza, formerly of Sporting Kansas City, was granted work permit in England, and it looks like he's heading, well, doesn't look like he is headed to Wigan in January. And having seen a lot of Espinoza, how do you feel about him as a player, and is what he can do, is that going to be able to transfer to the level at the Premier League, and how do you see him doing with that move?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because obviously he made a name for himself in the Olympics in the Brazil game, I believe it was, when he scored and got himself sent off. I think Roberto Martinez has been tracking him for a while. I think, you know, he's a hard worker. I think he gives them a different look to what they've got. I mean, Roberto Martinez is the typical Spanish coach in terms of the flair and the short passing game that he wants to play. So I think maybe that he's trying to add a little different dimension. You know, Espinoza, incredible work rate, phenomenal work rate, uncovers a lot of ground and does well breaking up plays. So I think maybe it gives him a little bit of a different look. There's no reason why he can't do a job there in the Premier League.
Well, it should be interesting. It's good to see yet another player, another young player, from the MLS making the transfer to the Premier League. And really, I think it shows, you know, the level that the MLS is growing to. And his final question for you, Aaron, you know, having obviously spent many years in England and being very familiar with the Premier League and now obviously spending some time here in the MLS as a coach, how do you see the growth of the league and the growth of the players in the league and in clubs and everything that's going on with the MLS? Where do you see that and how do you see that it's coming?
There's been a massive improvement over recent years. I think you've only got to look at the likes of Jeff Cameron, who's gone to Stoke City and slotted straight in there. You know, Brad Gazan, you know, he's established himself now at Aston Villa, Tim Howard. So there's, you know, Clint Dempsey. So there's definitely the quality is in America. The league is improving all the time. MLS as itself is, you know, the league has definitely got a vision and a goal of how they want to move the league forward, and they're very, very much dedicated to sticking to that plan. And I think it's the right way in this country. I don't think I think trying to do too much too soon would be a negative thing. You know, in terms of the development side of things, I think it's still got a little bit of a ways to go. I think the introduction of the academy system is good. I think this idea of homegrown players is going to be beneficial in a few more years' time. I think it's going to take a few more years before you really start to see the effect of homegrown players getting into the league and establishing themselves as regulars in MLS sides. But yeah, I think in terms of looking at long term and the plans that are set forward, I think they're pretty good, and I think the league will only continue to get stronger and get better as you know, the salary cap increases and more money's invested from the clubs in terms of the scouting and the youth side of things. I think all the time you're seeing more money put in from MLS teams, and it's only going to improve.
Yeah, well, it's good to hear. And we've been, you know, we do a little bit on the MLS every week, and you know, we've talked about throughout the course of us doing this show that we just see a huge improvement in the league, and you know, also in the structure of it, that, you know, the soccer specific stadiums that are going in almost every club now, and you know, just they're, like we talked about, the players moving to Europe that are finding success, and obviously the expanding academy system is going to help here in you know, 10 years down the road. So yeah, it seems to be very good, and you know, we're happy that you have a job in Chicago and you can come on the show and talk to us. So we're really glad that the league is expanding and doing well. So once again, I'd like to thank you, Aaron, for coming on the show you know, and giving your 2 cents. And when are we going to see you back in Seattle? Is that going to be today or is that tomorrow?
No, I'll be back up there tomorrow, I think. I'm staying down in Portland at the moment, so
moving a little slowly with your bear friend today. That's good.
Yes, that's correct. The bear is actually looking at me right now. He needs feeding.
That's not a shock. That's not a shock at all. So, all right, Aaron. Well, thanks again for your time, and we'll see you when you get back up to Seattle. Cheers. Thanks.
All right. Cheers, lad. Bueno.
Cheers, mate.
Oh, it's good. Good to have him, huh? Sam, I thought he, some good perspective. Your opening statement to him about the two goalkeepers was just classic. I mean, I'm gonna rank that right up there with Ferguson going off on Pardue with the Wii Club in the Northeast. I thought that was good. That was good. I liked it. But
one of my favorite ever comments from a commentator was Ron Atkinson. And I can't remember who scored the goal. I think it was Robbie Fowler back in his old Liverpool days. He said, that goal was so good. Two goalkeepers wouldn't have saved that. And that's what made me think about that. And Aston Villa can certainly do with a couple of goalies right now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they might need to bring Aaron and Sean Johnson over there because apparently things aren't going so well for Brad Guzan. Yeah, we'll see. But it was once again, thanks to Aaron Hyde, the Chicago Fire, coming on the show. You're listening to Todd Stauber and Sam Lady. I'm from the Touchline for 90 Minutes. We're on Blog Talk Radio and BackSportsPage.com. We've just got about 12 minutes here to go. Listeners, you can still call into the show and talk with us live today, 760-283-0846, or you can text us at 360-920-7273. As always, From the Touchline is brought to you by My Soccer Trainer, the highest-rated soccer training app available and a must for any player or coach. It is available on Android, iPhone, and the iPad. Sam, we're going to move on to the game predictor, where things have tightened up. I've had a shocking 2 weeks, and you're sitting with a 12-14 record, and I'm sitting at 12-12. We've got one result still pending, and that is where David Beckham will end up. It's looking like you're going to take that point, as you predicted PSG. I predicted Queen's Park Rangers in a bit of a upset bit there, but it looks as though, from what we hear this week, that David Beckham will not be playing in England. And to me, it's looking ever more likely that I think PSG and AC Milan might be the front runners. Any thoughts on Beckham and any the news that came out this week?
The first thing that springs to mind with Beckham is big package, right? And I'm not talking about his H&M commercials. I'm talking about the financial package. It's a catch-22. You know, Beckham's obviously going to be on a ton of money, but at the same time, Todd, you know, he deserves that. If you think about what the Beckham brand has done for the MLS, you think about the jersey sales. If you go anywhere in the world now, to the Bahamas, you know, back, you know, 6-7 months ago, and, you know, there's kids there running around in David Beckham Galaxy shirts. So You know, the, I think whoever picks him up, they're going to have to pay big wages, and PSG is certainly in a position to do that. But at the same time, they're going to get a massive return on their investment. You know, Beckham in itself is a brand now, and you know, people that don't even watch soccer and you know they know who he is, and they're you know wearing Beckham 23 apparel. So PSG looks good financially. You know, it's a city that I'm sure his missus would enjoy to live in, and it just ticks all the boxes.
Interestingly enough, though, Sam, I was talking to somebody this week who was saying that. They had heard some talk that Beckham was also interested in PSG because they could live at their home in England, and he could take a helicopter to training every day just across the channel. And I just thought, what a, how unbelievable would that be? But I think that Beckham's been clear that he does want to spend more time in England, and so maybe that's the thought, is that he can fly or have somebody fly him into training every day. I mean, how crazy would that be? It's like James Bond playing for PSG. But but I thought that was an interesting rumor. How long do you think the helicopter flight would be from where he lives in England over to Paris? Is that like a 20-minute or is that a 40-minute ride, or what is it?
It's got to be an hour and a half, sort of, imagine. It's got to be about an hour and a half from depending on if it's Beckingham Palace or one of his more central-looking houses. It's got to be
9 minutes. Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see where he goes. We'll still wait on that and that result. We're going to go as we talk. First game of the week, Everton Chelsea. Sam, what do you got?
I'm going to go with 3-1 to. I thought I'm going to go 2-1 to Chelsea.
2-1 Chelsea. Excellent. I think Chelsea's in good form. I like, as you said, I think Everton is very, very good at home. I'm a little concerned as to where Everton's goals will come from. I am gonna give this to Everton, and I'm gonna give it to him at 2-1.
Wow.
Next game on tap, QPR Liverpool.
I'm thinking 4-1 Liverpool.
4-1 Liverpool.
Yeah, Suarez hat trick.
Wow. I'm going to make a note of that Suarez hat trick here, because if that happens, I'm going to give you a
bonus. Is that a bonus point?
I'll give you a bonus 5 points. I'll give you a bonus 5 points if you call that Suarez hat trick.
Okay.
I am going to, however, disagree with you once again, because I think that Queen's Park Rangers, well, both teams are very desperate for this win. I believe Queen's Park Rangers is more desperate. And I believe, especially, you know, Redknapp's come out and criticized some of the top players. Obviously, he's had a row with Bolsinga, who looks to be heading somewhere, anywhere out of QPR in the near future. I think he's shaking things up there a bit maybe add a little accountability to that side. I'm gonna go 1-0 QPR.
And
I'm not calling for a Suarez hat trick. We're gonna move on.
There's no way QPR can stop Suarez from scoring, that's for sure.
Okay. That's good, we'll see. It's good for the show if we disagree. We're gonna push on to Tuesday's game on New Year's Day. Man City Stoke, Sam.
Oof. Where is it at? Where is the game, Stoke?
That's an excellent question. I will let you know that right now.
I'm going to go with 3-1 Man City, regardless of what the game is.
Really? 3-1 Man City. Well, the game is at the Etihad, so 3-1 Man City.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go... I do think Stoke's also going to score, maybe. They've been on a good run here. I'm gonna actually match that, Sam. I'm gonna go 3-1 as well, because I think that Man City's got three in them, and I'm gonna go exactly with what you said on that 3-1. So sorry to have to do that to you, but I think that's the bonus of you going first, is that you get the first crack at it. Next game should be an interesting one. Swansea Villa. Can Villa erase the nightmare?
I think we're looking at 2-1 to Swansea.
2-1 to Swansea. So Villa, they will not get shut out, according to Sam Lady.
That depends if Aston Villa are clear to play with two goalies.
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the deal. It is at the Liberty Stadium, so it's away from Villa Park. Not that that's helped Villa, but they will be making a trip to the Liberty Stadium. So 2-1 to Swansea. I'm going to go 2-0 to Swansea. I don't think Villa is going to score again, even though they could be due. I'm going to go with that. So that's good. So just to review that there, you've got Chelsea 2-1 over Everton. I've got Everton 2-1 over Chelsea. You've got Liverpool 4-1 over QPR, where I've got QPR 1-0 over Liverpool. We both have Man City beating Stoke 3-1 at the Etihad on Tuesday. And also on Tuesday, you've got Swansea 2-1 over the Villa. And I've got them 2-0 over Villa. So we'll... interesting to see where that takes us. Once again, Sam, you're 12 wins, 14 losses there, and I'm on 12 wins and 12 losses. And I think, you know, really I should transfer that over to a point system, which I'll do here. Because we are giving out bonus points, as listeners, you just heard, for things like if we call the result. Just, you know, if the result is called exactly, then it's a 3-point bonus. And as the host, I've given Sam a gracious opportunity by granting him 5-point bonus if Luis Suarez does indeed score a hat trick against Queen's Park Rangers. Sam, any other thoughts on the day? It's been a big day. United, City, Nasri sent off, Walcott with a hat trick, Arsenal, 4 goals in the final 20 minutes. Any parting final thoughts as we move into 2013? This will be the last show of 2012.
Yeah, it could be a tight one for Man City, Man United. You know, puffing their chest and just again, you know, showcasing the attacking talents they've got going forward. You know, big game for Chelsea tomorrow to continue momentum under Rafa Benitez. Yeah, 2013, I don't see, you know, a lot of people predicting the Man United are going to run away with it. I don't see that happening. There's a lot of twists and turns. There's too many good teams in the Premier League at the moment. So if you look at just how close it is between, you know, third and, you know, 10th, 12th, 13th position, you know, there are too many good teams that are picking up points. You know, you've got a team like Stoke that, you know, tied 11 games this season. You know, those teams like that are going to take points off every single team in the league. It's going to be exciting. I don't know if it's going to come down to the last day drama like it did, but, you know, we're pretty sure that, you know, things are going to get pretty exciting in the new year. I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to the Man United-Real Madrid game in the Champions League. You know, a bit of a, you know, Real Madrid and Jose Mourinho hitting a big bump. You know, I think it's the biggest test of Jose Mourinho's career here. I read an article, you know, this past week about, you know, the Jose Mourinho effect, and, you know, his number one time or his peak time is up until 3 years, and after 3 seasons, you know, perhaps the magic wears off, or, you know, he becomes a little bit bored and looks for a new project. So a lot of talk about, you know, Mourinho leaving in June. Yeah, you're looking forward to that Man United Real Madrid game, that's for sure.
Well, I think so, too. I mean, I was going to say the one thing I'm looking forward to the most coming in 2030 is not just the United-Real game, because I think that's going to be great, but I think the final 16 teams are all very good teams. I mean, you saw Malaga beat Real just the other day, and they looked very good. There's a lot of great teams in that final 16. I'm really looking forward to the Champions League, and I think 2013 – is going to bring us some excitement here in the Premier League, because while United is on a run at this point, when they start having to play Champions League games and as the season wears on, you know, I think that City's got a run in them, Chelsea's got a run in them, Arsenal's got a run in them, and, you know, who knows, maybe DVD and Tottenham even have a run in them, and I think it's going to be fantastic. We're also going to have the the start of the MLS season coming back up. And, you know, there's just a lot to look forward to in 2013. 2012 has been a fantastic year, unless you're a Man United fan, and which I am. So it hasn't been. It's been the worst year of my life. But it was a great 2012. We just want to sign off now for 2012. For Sam Lady, I'm Todd Stauber. Back sportspage.com from the touch sign for 90 minutes. Have a good New Year's. Be safe.